had managed to climb into the belfry. I applaud you both on your resourcefulness. Those before you succumbed to fear, weakness, madness, or all three in the end. I can guarantee measures will be taken to ensure no one will find refuge upon the second floor ever again. In one way, I must thank you for revealing the flaws in our designs. You forced us to consider recourses we've never needed to consider in the past. Well, fuck me, Gus muttered. Oh, he's a winner, all right, Talbert said. No, I mean... Gus stared him in the eye. I mean, I understand exactly where the old bastard's coming from. Talbert appeared shocked, as if slapped. His face darkened. You fucking agree with this piece of shit? Not agreeing, just understanding is all. There's a difference? Of course there's a difference, you goddamn moron. Talbert cautioned Gus with an unfriendly look. Then the unmistakable buzz of a chainsaw cut in. Chapter 8. That vicious whine rendered both men speechless. A second later, the angry drone spiked in pitch as the chainsaw's teeth met resistance. Sweet fucking monkey balls, Talbert swore. Gus agreed. We'll kill anyone you send up here, man, Talbert shouted over the chainsaw's fury. But Mortimer was gone, or at least no longer responding. What's he cutting? Gus asked Talbert.
Something nearby by the sounds of it.
Where's the stairs?
The closet?
Yeah, the closet.
All right.
Pushing past Gus, Talbert threw the bedroom door open and walked out into the white-carpeted hall, the barest light frosting the fabric like a polar bear's scruff. Ornate tables displayed vases of black woods and small wooden chests. Alabaster nymphs spilling milk from buckets occupied shallow niches. Grand paintings of sweeping landscapes lined the walls between. All were intact, untouched. The chainsaw paused, the echo lingering through the house. Then it bit again. They speedwalked down the corridor before turning left, passing doorways, glimpsing sensuous, bare timber beam bedrooms. The sound of the chainsaw grew. Talbert stopped at the head of a wide staircase descending to the first floor. A solid-looking wall of heavy planks barricaded the stairs halfway down, measured and boarded up to near perfection, keeping the undead at bay. Gus knew he'd seen this before, but from the other side. The chainsaw's head cut through the wall, separating the first and second floors in a projectile spray of wood chips. The chainsaw pushed inward, working with sawdust fury, before being pulled out of sight, and Gus realized light was tracing around a huge, door-sized cut in the barricade. A heavy boot dislodged the lower part of the cut slab with a loud whump, tilting it inward. Work-gloved fingers clasped the upper end and pulled it down with a squeal. More sawdust billowed. The section came free in a clatter. A large man, bare-chested and heavily muscled, stepped into the opening, wearing a skirt of leather that might have been a butcher's apron, a chainsaw held at his waist. Empty bandoliers crisscrossed his chest, while shoulder pads of spikes covered his shoulders. Sweat shone upon his muscular frame, glazed with dust. But the thing that disturbed both Gus and Talbert the most wasn't the outfit. It was the shining Japanese no mask hiding his face. One subtle alteration marred the mask. Battlements of crooked teeth filled its open mouth, the corners hinting at an evil smile. Half-moon eyes, wide and brimming with perverse blackness, stared unblinking at the two men. Then, at some unheard cue, the imposing figure stepped out of sight.
"Holy shit," Talbert whispered, already backing away.
Gus held on a little longer until he saw the dead shuffling into view. First, it was a single set of feet, then lower legs, then a viscous, tidal seepage of bodies, some hunkered over, some tall, and none of them crawling. The sound of all those feet dragging across a fortune of marble seconds ahead of the gut-turning stink of flesh soon to follow rode the air currents like a colorless, debilitating membrane. The mass converged on the hole in the wall, and the sight of them made Gus back up 2 steps, wishing he was back on the farm, smelling brewing tea instead, underneath a night sky all aglitter. "Let's boot," Talbert yelled, slapping his companion's back.
"We could fight here," Gus said, pointing to the hole. "That's a bottleneck.
Too wide, bro."
"Where'd that—"
"I'm going,"
Talbert shouted and jogged away. Gus divided his attention between the breach in the wall below and Talbert's fleeing back. The gimps ascended the stairs, worming through the hole 3 abreast as if under pressure. 1 stumbled, and 3 followed in a domino effect. The dead behind the fallen struggled over them. Gus hefted his bat, struck the pose, hesitated, and then rushed after Talbert. He chased the man down another wide corridor, rounded a grand archway of fitted stone, and saw Talbert standing at a rail, gazing out over an open space. Sofa chairs lay arranged around a fine-looking glass table, while towering potted greenery, which had to be imitation, adorned the whole area, creating the illusion of a piece of captured jungle. Talbert regarded Gus and pointed with his machete. Checking on their pursuers, Gus stopped beside his only companion and balked at what lay below. An underground cavern draped in earth tones stretched out before them, an enormous indoor grotto dominated by an Olympic-sized swimming pool in its center. Moody shores of fabricated sands ringed the entire scene, with cone-shaped stalagmites rising around it and stalactites hanging from above, a few of which even connected, creating emaciated pillars. Drooping greenery filled the corners, bestowing unnecessary shade upon daybeds, single chairs, and boat-drink patio-sized tables. That was all peripheral. What lay inside that fabricated vision shocked the 2 men into near paralysis. Zombies. Zombies choked the pool's depths like an ill-kept flower bed of rotten animation. The undead swayed against each other like undersea flora caught in deep-sea tides, wailing, mesmerized by the fact they couldn't escape the pool's depths. 1 end, the shallow part near Gus and Talbert, had a wooden barrier that clashed with the cavern's ambience but effectively kept the zombies trapped there. Only the heads and hands were visible. The pool sloped into a deep end, and the height of the dead slanted with it to a point where the black and gray-headed figures near the bottom couldn't reach the sandy edges. But that was only half the horror. Suspended by a system of ropes and metal poles just beyond the edge of a diving board, hung Benny by his hands. They had stripped him of all clothing, and his bare white ass faced the 2 men. His bare feet dangled not 6 feet above the deep end, where a ghastly array of pasty white arms, bare hands and fingers, weakly clawed for his out-of-reach toes like a ravenous carpet.
"Oh, Jesus Christ," Gus whispered, stunned by the scene. He thought he'd seen all manner of zombie collections over the years, but perhaps he'd simply told himself that to prepare himself for the sights yet undiscovered. Whoever had captured Benny had strung him up like a prisoner about to be made to talk, but instead of sharks, a more sinister fate awaited. Something mechanical crackled to life, and Benny was lowered toward the pool, much to the delight of the trapped zombies. The pool became a nest of clutching and upturned faces. Benny's descent was torturously slow, long enough for him to awaken and whine in mindless terror, a sound a trapped animal might make. Both Gus and Talbert recognized Benny's petrified vocals. Gus cursed his leaving the farm, thinking he should never have given in to Adam and Maggie. It was far better to live being perceived as an ungrateful prick than to witness Benny's execution.
"Those fucking sons of bitches," Talbert swore, practically vibrating with his inability to save his friend. "What can we do?"
That flummoxed Gus. What could they do? He studied the sandy poolside below where the ropes and winch were moored.
"I want you to see this," Mortimer's voice spoke around them, the eagerness in his voice unmistakable. "You need to see this.
"You shit-lubed son of a bitch," Talbert swore, looking toward the ceiling. "You realize what you're doing?"
"Of course I do," Mortimer chuckled. "We've conducted this exact execution at least a dozen times before. I must confess it is true what they say. You never quite forget your first time. Now, while there is a sublime stirring of excitement, I do find myself becoming rather detached from the spectacle. Like a person who's seen the ending to the same movie repeatedly, I've become desensitized to the pleadings, the feedings. The horror has been reduced to, say, the equivalent of a child tearing the legs off a grasshopper."
"Talbert!" Benny screeched, twisting, peeking over his shoulder. "Talbert! Oh, Christ, man, do something!"
"He is doing something," Mortimer pointed out, sounding puzzled with the man's request. "He's watching. Watching what the Hollywood establishment might label torture porn, I believe."
"I'll fucking torture porn your ass," Talbert swore. "I'll pile drive a red-hot poker up your shit chute, and when your ring hole's fucking fused around that piece of iron, I'll yank it out and do it again."
Mortimer's growing laughter boomed across the cavern's pool, a phlegmy rattle that agitated the zombies even more. Then, at the distant end of the grotto, a familiar figure appeared with a bow in hand. The Korean mask stared up at the human onlookers.
"Ah, Donald's arrived," Mortimer choked out, attempting to control his laughter. "Just to ensure nothing happens on your end."
Talbert brandished the machete, looking to hack ahead. Benny wailed hysterically, thrashing against his bonds and swinging, his wavering feet not a meter above the teeming pool.
"Come on," Gus said and turned away.
"You will not," Mortimer warned, his voice cold. "You will watch, else—"
With that, the rope spun out in a click of sinewy heat, and Benny plummeted to within a foot of the nearest set of hooked fingers. The man freaked, lifting his knees to his stomach.
"Don't!" Talbert screamed.
"Move anywhere, and I will finger the controls to drop him. Straight down."
"You're going to fucking kill him anyway,"
Gus shouted over the ravenous chorus and Benny screeching.
"Yes, I am. I am. But in the moments prior to his death, before that mind-freezing instance where the first finger grazes a bare toe, then the bottom of the foot, the ankle, grabbing it in a graveyard death clench, pulling the rest of him down into that festering morass where others can touch, can grip, and then that first exquisite bite. Every bit as electric and brain-blowing as, say, slamming a car door on your finger, the head being thrown back, the sounds as one's flesh is devoured in slow, gnawing mouthfuls. That's what I want you to behold, to experience as fucking penance for ever driving up my lane and believing you could trespass on my property."
With another lurch of the rope, Benny shrieked as he plummeted, his toes dipping into that wiggling surface of fingers. The contact made him jerk his limbs back up to his belly as if he were performing a mid-air crunch.
"Talbert!"
Hearing his name, the man slumped to his knees, eyes bulging helplessly. He pulled back his machete arm to throw it, but Gus stopped him.
"No," he said to Talbert's broken face. "That's not going to do a damn thing."
"Talbert!"
And then a new sound, a chainsaw starting up once again, chewing into the evil hide of the house, caused both men to look over their shoulders.
"Yes," Mortimer purred. "Life goes on, and walls must fall. Stephanie has been instructed to continue releasing the hounds. Flood the second floor. Part of why I wish you to see your friend's demise. The upper floors had never been breached until you little shit-stains came along. You see, I mean to catch you as well. Catch you and sling you up, cock-swinging and bare-assed like your squealing little piggy friend there.
maybe even head first this time. Or one will be head first while the other one hangs by his fingers, feeling every bone snap as your own body weight pulls the joints apart.
Apart! Mortimer screamed into the microphone, while the other one has his fucking eyes chewed out.
Gus gripped Talbert's shoulder but got pushed away. He stumbled back a step and saw the approaching shadows emerging from the corridor, creeping along like intrepid explorers of an undiscovered country, lipless grins blazing.
Never should have left the farm,
Gus swore, taking up his bat. Overhead, Mortimer babbled on with his hateful rant, leaving no doubt in Gus's mind the man's brain had long since short-fused. Crazy bastard could be shitting in his own hand and writing on the walls for all Gus knew.
Talbert! Oh, Jesus! No, 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 no!
Gus swung at an undead workman dressed in a blood-cake t-shirt and jeans. The bat crumpled the workman's skull and spattered moldy jelly against the far wall. As it dropped to its knees, Gus hammered another brain pan, mashing it into its shoulders and skewing its fleshless jaws into a weird V. Arms reached for him, and he swatted them away with a series of swings, angling himself toward the unobstructed corridor on the other side of the lounge area. Benny howled in the background, pausing only long enough to reload his lungs. Unimaginable agony turned his words into a blaring siren. Mortimer continued insisting that Talbert and Gus watch how trespassers were punished in this part of the world, actually swearing at them to look, vowing even more disturbing punishment once they were caught.
Talbert, Gus roared, roundhousing a gimp and removing its jaw in a burst of rubbery flesh. Talbert!
Talbert retreated from the railing, offering a glimpse of Benny being lowered into that chilling vat of death, head thrashing on his shoulders while his vocal cords frayed. Gus didn't want to imagine what happened first. Benny's legs tired, and he had to lower them into that nest of mouths and claws, or he just kept being lowered until the zombies took him whole. Mortimer screamed, all civility gone from his voice, cursing the two men as they smashed and chopped their way through attacking deadheads. Talbert sided with Gus, and together they retreated from the oncoming front of undead. The foremost of the zombies tripped and fell over their headless brethren, revealing the corridor behind them choked wall to wall with shadows. The lights went out, and Mortimer screeched into the microphone like the singer in a death metal band stuck in a rage, a madman's squawking, oddly in sync with the furious song of the chainsaw. The corridor walls shook with the oral warfare, unnerving Gus.
I'm gonna rip that old fucker's nutsack off, Talbert swore in the dark.
I'll hold him down, Gus vowed, flipping up his visor so he might see a little better in the decadent tomb.
They fumbled along, passing open doors, and scampered up a short flight of steps before heading through another stone archway into a midnight black living room. Talbert ran around outlines of plush recliners and crystal coffee tables toward an archway on the far wall. Then he halted. Gus drew up beside him. The chainsaw had stopped. Mortimer had ceased his caterwauling. Poor Benny, however, did not stop. His death cries sounded fainter in the distance, delirious, almost completely dunked into that tank of dead limbs, open mouths fastening onto Benny's naked flesh. Gus shook himself free of the image.
They're coming, Talbert said, looking back.
Gus glanced one way and then the other, trying to hear.
You're sure on that?
Talbert's dark features faced him.
Oh, shit, yeah. That bastard with the chainsaw opened up another stairway.
You can hear them.
Talbert's shadowy head nodded. The man was holding it together better than expected, and for that Gus was grateful.
Ah, shit, run! Talbert barked, leaping through the archway and bolting to the right. Follow me, he called out.
Gus intended to do just that, but the house interior was nearly black. He crashed into a table, kicked a fallen vase, and hit a low-hanging arch with his shoulder. Talbert turned a corner, and when Gus followed, he saw another railing of squat columns, another set of stairs, and a teeming black gush of bodies pulling themselves through a new hole, staining the dull glow of dreamy white.
Flooding the upstairs, all right, Gus observed.
Yeah, but I know something, Talbert said and half-smiled. I know where another set of stairs are. This way.
As they hurried along, barely navigating the hallways, Talbert explained.
While I was here, I did get some exploring done. Fuckhead Morty can't completely board up the rotunda, and that's where the staircase rings the walls right up to the third level.
So?
So, Chainsaw Steffi is on his way there now, and I'm betting he'll be delayed by whatever dead fucker's still below hunting for us.
They passed through halls, dens, and even kitchenettes until they raced through a dim gallery lined with landscape paintings. The far wall opened into the majestic space of the rotunda, a design of metal and glass stolen straight out of a fairy tale ballroom. Above, night sparkled, seen through vast panes of glass somehow molded into the cavernous dome Gus had seen from outside the mansion. No shutters barred the heavens from above. An eerie marble staircase with elegant pillars coiled upward along the walls, seemingly glowing in the low light, to end at the topmost level. Narrow archways were evenly spaced apart on the first level, branching into halls that led to mystery.
Wait, Talbert said, reaching in behind the chest plates of his armor. He pulled out a fancy rope. I cut this off a window, used it to haul myself up to the second level here.
He tied one end off around his waist and offered the other to Gus.
Take this.
And what? What are you doing? Mortimer's suspicious voice clicked overhead.
The two men ignored him. Talbert glanced back the way they'd come.
Get down there and stop that masked fuck from sawing up those barriers and letting more zombies up here.
How many are in this place?
Talbert shook his head.
I'm figuring we all must have put down 100 so far, and more keep showing up. He must have a goddamn reserve stashed away.
Stephanie, they're at the rotunda, Mortimer's voice barked. It looks as if they're going to leap back down.
Noisy bastard, Gus growled and looped the cord around his waist. Don't you cut that rope, he warned as he slung himself over the railing.
Fuck you gonna do about it?
Sayonara, fat ass.
With that, Talbert stepped forward and shoved Gus, dislodging him from the rails and sending him swinging into space. Chapter 9. Gus yelped as his body maxed out the short drop and swung inward, the cord tightening around his midsection, tipping his upper body back as if he were Tarzaning it. And in that arc, he glimpsed the leather-skirted bulk of the man called Stephanie. Just before his feet crashed into the man's chest.
He's here, Gus blurted, and immediately got dropped to the floor.
Talbert had cut the cord.
Stephanie, in all his ferocious leather attire, limped to his feet just as Gus stood and one-armed his bat, lashing the aluminum across the no-mask with a satisfying crack. Mortimer's stunned henchman stumbled backward against a wall, his mask hanging askew. Stephanie tried to correct his ghostly face while thumbing the electric start button of the chainsaw. Gus got another hand on his bat and clocked it across his adversary's head a second time, staggering him visibly. The chainsaw clattered onto the marble.
"Donald, to the rotunda! Run!" Mortimer blared across the dome's expanse. "They have Steph! Run!"
Taking a deep breath, Gus smashed old Steph clean across the face again, sending the mask scuttling across the floor. The fourth blow landed flush on the big man's temple, and he collapsed in his leather duds. Gus reared back for another strike and paused for all of 2 seconds. It had been almost 2 years since he last killed another living person. And gazing at the freak at his feet, he didn't feel a lick of guilt. Gus swung the bat over his shoulder and down, breaking Stephanie's skull. The brute collapsed, twitching in a widening pool of maroon. Undisguised grief and rage cut through the loudspeakers, intense enough to threaten blowing the wiring. Gus flinched at the sound.
"I'll kill you," Mortimer frothed in a rattling voice. "I'll kill you. I'll nail your bleeding ass to a table and keep you like a pet. I'll make your death as slow and painful as..."
Gus tuned out the rest and glanced around the empty rotunda. A pair of legs appeared from the second floor, and Talbert lowered himself with a grunt.
"The fuck you do?" he asked as he got his feet under himself.
"Killed a bitch."
Talbert straightened and inspected Stephanie's bulk.
"One fucked up bitch."
"And the way Mort's screaming, you'd think it was his son."
"Maybe it was."
"If it was," Gus said, gathering up the chainsaw with his free hand, "maybe he'll rupture something while screaming his nuts off."
Talbert's features scrunched in disdain.
"I'll give him a couple of things to scream about," Gus vowed,
brandishing the chainsaw in one hand and pointing at the dead man nearby.
"That's one."
"That's one," Talbert agreed.
"Feel like getting the others?"
"Oh, fuck yeah."
"Watch my back then," Gus ordered, and went to the wide stairs and the first barrier there.
He placed his bat to one side and powered up the chainsaw, thumbing the start button.
"Starting to think," Gus said as he braced his legs on the stairs, "that cutting through these barriers is a good thing. Why should we have all the fun?"
Talbert's face lightened with comprehension, but before the buzzing saw snarled into wood, he pointed to the second level and a crowd gathering around the railing. A knot of zombies descended the steps, only to be stopped by the wooden barricade. Gus saw them all and powered down the chainsaw.
"Well, shit."
Zombies pushed against the upstairs rail. Several toppled over and fell to the marble floor with a sludgy clap like sacks of wet cement bursting at rotten seams. All manner of organic muck squirted from the corpses upon impact, a viscous soup reeking of spoiled meat. A pool slowly formed, spreading outward with every new diver splattering upon the fine marble. Some crashed upon the ones actually rising from the expanding mess. They continued piling against the rails, leaning over until gravity sucked them down. Gus prodded Talbert in the shoulder, pushing him to the lower steps.
"Get into the open," he said. "Let them see you."
"What?"
"Just a few seconds, anyway. They're thinning themselves out."
Upon the rotunda's floor, bodies pushed through that foul stew like half-frozen tadpoles. Some of the dead sat up straight in the deepening pond of bodies, ignoring broken bones, only to have new corpses flatten them from above. Talbert descended and split the skull of one uniformed serviceman, halting its creeping progress. He placed his boot heel against its shoulder and wrenched the machete free. A hand reached out from the sloppy pileup of corpses, trying for an ankle. Talbert hacked the hand off, blade ringing off the floor. The dead wailed at the living. Their voices carried to the upper dome, making it known through the house that fresh meat had been found. Gus dropped the chainsaw, took up his bat, and joined Talbert. He bashed limbs and heads as if he were flattening wheat beside a pond of industrial filth. One zombie, a white-dressed maid with the front saturated in gore, actually climbed to her feet and walked toward them both, lipless jaws chattering. Gus smoked her across the face, and her remaining features disintegrated in a chunky burst. But she didn't drop. Despite having her entire sinus cavity laid bare and displaying squashed organic tissue Gus had no clue of, she walked on, arms raised, dainty hands ending in peeled fingers. Gus hesitated at the fright. Then Talbert's machete split the deadhead's noggin to the eyes.
"Recognize someone, did you?"
He kicked the corpse off his blade. Gus composed himself as the rain of bodies slowed. At a glance, it appeared most of the dead had fallen in crippled heaps. He realized then that Mortimer had ceased screaming. Zombies spilled out of the archways on the ground floor.
"All right," Gus barked and bounded up the stairs. "Keep them back."
He left Talbert and switched out his bat for the battery-powered chainsaw. The tool came to life with one jab of its electric start button, and Gus cut wide across the top of the wooden barricade. Chips and dust flew into his face, making him pause to slap his visor into place. Talbert chopped and hacked, slowing the mansion's residents. Gus completed the first cut in less than 15 seconds, pulled the saw free of the thick wood, and finished a pair of downward strokes in an equal amount of time. The chainsaw had surprising power, and Gus wondered how much juice remained in the rig after gnawing through those sturdy planks. At the end of his final stroke, he pulled the blade out and laid a boot to the wood, kicking the slab free of its remaining fibers.
"Talbert!" Gus shouted, and buzzed into the head of a straggler gimp just on the other side of the wall.
Talbert stood not 3 steps behind him, up to his knees in a growing wall of corpses. Pale faces gleamed under the dome, the only flickers of light, and a haunting mob of outlines.
"You made the hole big enough," Talbert yelled, clipping his shoulder on his way through.
"It's called a fucking bottleneck, you moron. Hold them there while I cut through the next one."
With that, Gus retrieved his bat and sprinted up the curving stairs, the thick layers of his suit steaming him. A few zombies crossed his path on the second floor landing, forcing him to choose between his 2 weapons. He dropped the bat. There was a feral glee in applying the chainsaw's whirling teeth to decomposing flesh, but the ferocious back spatter quickly blinded his visor, and he realized it wasn't the weapon of choice. He tossed the chainsaw, spent precious seconds wiping his visor clean, and slapped it up. He picked up his bat at the edge of the stairs and cracked 2 remaining gimps. Then he hoofed it toward the 3rd landing and the wooden wall barring passage halfway up the stairs. The lights came back on, illuminating everything. Farther behind, Talbert cringed at the blinding light, still chopping at anything piling through the opening in the first barrier. More dead things shambled into the killing floor of the rotunda, fully revealed, enough to send a chill of worry through the man. He chopped the head off another handyman-type deadhead. An arm reached for him. He hacked it off with 1 cut, flash exposing a black cross-section of the forearm. Another zombie squirmed through, its torso slick with slime. It slipped on the stairs and fell. Talbert crushed the head under a boot heel. The chainsaw buzzed above, chewing into a wall and distracting him. A zombie hit his chest, driving him back, and he fell hard against the stairs. His unprotected head bounced against an edge. Another gimp slicked through the breach, its face grimy and skeletal, reaching for him. Talbert tried to move and discovered with a doped rush of fear his limbs were responding with a hypothermic sluggishness. A hand, wreathed in tatters of skin and musculature, pawed at his thigh, nails clawing into armor plating, discovering sections covered only in denim. Fingers sloughed over straps and buckles, digging into jeans. Grunting, Talbert held the machete across his chest and pushed the blade forward, scalping the gimp's soft skull as if shaving a sliver of cheese off a stubborn block. Each cut lifted the zombie's head. He kept cutting, his senses slowly leveling out, feeling fingers clutching at his upper thighs. More zombies squeezed through the glut at the opening in a horrid bloom. Some fell onto his lower legs, squashing the deadhead's fingers for valuable seconds. Talbert needed to push the head back and stab the machete underneath the chin, up into the brain. The creature's death-grinning face flopped into his crotch, and Talbert had never felt more grateful for a protective cup than at that exact moment. Grimacing, he kicked free of the oozing bodies, flipped onto his hands and knees, and crawled away from the stalled bottleneck. Then something kicked him in his side, plastering him against the wall. Pain robbed him of his breath, and for several seconds he fixated on an arrow sticking out just above his hip, where the plates of his body armor were kept in place by straps. Blood seeped from the wound, dark and precious. Grimacing, Talbert looked toward the 2nd floor and saw no one, hearing only the buzzing of Gus's chainsaw somewhere above. The zombie still crawled through the hole in the barrier, reaching for him on the stairs. Clenching teeth, Talbert tried getting to his feet, feeling how the arrow moved inside, and blinked against the flashing black motes before his eyes. He glanced toward the rotunda floor. There, seen through the posts of the staircase, stood Donald. The archer had taken up position inside an archway, his Korean mask smiling pleasantly, aiming another arrow. Donald released, and Talbert twisted to escape. Not fast enough, however, as the arrow spiked his left thigh, grazing bone and jacking nerves as if zapped by a live wire. Talbert gripped his leg. A missile sizzled toward his face, and he ducked while reflexively lifting his left hand to protect his head. The shaft perforated his palm with a shocking whoomp, the impact twisting him off balance. Talbert cried out and dropped onto his belly, seeing the barbless point of the arrow sticking clean through the meat of his palm. Whimpering, he gripped the shaft and pulled 5 inches free with a grunt and a spurt of gore. Something grabbed his foot. "Fuck off," Talbert said, and instinctively tried to kick with his wounded leg. A shot of hot agony lanced through his entire side, paralyzing him for seconds. Enough time for a deadhead's hands to grasp his knees. Gasping, Talbert flipped onto his back and booted the zombie's face with his good leg, squashing the dead thing's features. He kicked twice more, removing the head from the zombie's shoulders. The victory was short-lived as a stream of gimps oozed through the opening in the barrier, slipping over each other like buttered worms. They crawled toward Talbert. Grimacing, Talbert pushed himself up the stairs, dragging the boneless rubber of his leg and leaving thick blots of blood on the staircase. He glanced toward Donald and grunted a laugh at seeing the archer fighting off a handful of attackers. A zombie stood up from the scrimmage of undead creeping after Talbert. Another gimp rolled over and hit the standing deadhead's leg, jostling it against the wall. The zombie righted itself and walked up the stairs. The thing had no eyes, and a long ribbon of skin, from its bottom lip to its Adam's apple, had been ripped away. It floundered after Talbert, unseeing eye cavities fixed on him, picking up his location by either smell or hearing or some unknown sense bestowed upon the undead. The monster stepped on another zombie, pinning it to the steps. The blind gimp reared its head up as if hearing something, and reached for Talbert's retreating ankle. Talbert peeked over his shoulder at the thing, hearing a mnemonic wheeze escaping its chest. Then, in a flash, the zombie's head burst apart with a grisly pop. "Come on," Gus shouted, aluminum bat in hand. He hooked Talbert's armpits and got him to his feet.
"He got me," Talbert winced.
"In the side, right?"
"And the leg. Hand."
"Goddamn shooting gallery here," Gus grumped, looking in Donald's direction as he lugged the bleeding man up the stairs. Talbert stumbled and almost pulled his rescuer off his feet. An arrow screamed into the wall behind them, embedding its head deep. Another one punched Gus square in the shoulder, dropping him to his knees and causing him to spill Talbert.
"Christ," Gus gasped, feeling as if he'd been jabbed with a prong.
"He's getting another one ready,"
Talbert said, and flattened on the stairs. Gus placed his body between the wounded man and the archer, set his jaw, and hauled him along by his armpits, past the landing. Talbert cringed as he threw his arm around Gus's neck. Together they stood and staggered up the staircase until they made it through the hole cut into the third barrier. No arrows came from Donald. Gus ignored the stairway continuing to the fourth floor and instead dragged Talbert down a polished corridor basking in warm, angelic light. They ducked inside a bedroom where night could be seen through unshuttered windows. Gus carried his bleeding companion to the bed and dumped him on a rosy red duvet, eyeing the adjoining ensuite. Talbert broke into giggles as Gus returned to the bedroom's entrance.
"Fuck's wrong with you?" Gus demanded, closing the door and finding the light switch.
Red light illuminated the room, stopping him in his tracks. Talbert hoisted himself a little farther onto the bed before plopping his head onto a plush, tube-shaped pillow. He lay there, staring at the ceiling for a moment, then smiled and chuckled again.
"Hugh, bro,"
he gasped between peals of mirth.
"You see what you did?"
Gus didn't see. He pulled a recliner toward the door to barricade it. Talbert's form rattled with another belly laugh, lasting puzzling seconds, before he sighed and stared at the ceiling.
"You saved my ass."
Shoving the chair into place but questioning whether it would do much good, Gus regarded the man on the bed.
"Yeah, well, don't get used to it," he said, and went to the bathroom.
He found some thick white towels and face cloths hanging off metal racks and brought them all back to the wounded man.
"I'm no expert," Gus muttered as he applied a towel to Talbert's leg and sighed. "But I bet you're wishing you wore your fucking fireman suit now, eh?"
"Only if I was on a stage, wiggling my ass at the ladies."
"Yeah, right."
Gus drew away the towel and saw the dark bruise soaking it. His innards went cold at the sight of so much blood. He clawed buckles open on the armor plates covering the top of Talbert's leg and flipped them back. He immediately took a long towel and looped it around the thigh, creating a tourniquet.
"You know what's funny?" Talbert said, his voice becoming slurred. I actually wanted to off you. Out here. Make up any story I wanted then.
Yeah, Gus said, nodding the towel and drawing a deflated hiss.
Fuck, man, take it easy,
Talbert whispered and turned his head toward the windows.
Nice place.
Yeah. Gus grabbed another towel and applied it to Talbert's wound above his hip, balking at whether he should remove it or leave it in. He left it in, pressed the cloth around the arrow tightly and held it there, watching the material slowly bleed dark. Silence from Talbert, deep and reflective. Then,
"Sorry, bro."
Despite his dislike for the man, Gus's throat constricted, which surprised him. He'd gotten used to thinking of Talbert as a piece of shit for so long that that simple, exhausted apology touched a chord within him while the towel around Talbert's wound darkened. "Nah," Gus rumbled and sniffed, clearing his filling sinuses.
"Don't worry about it. Can't say there wasn't a day or two I thought the same thing."
That surprised Talbert enough to lift his head off the pillow.
"You wanted to kill me? You treacherous fuck you."
Gus chuckled then, and Talbert joined him. And for a moment they shared perhaps the only enjoyable moment they'd ever shared since meeting each other.
"Thanks for pulling me up," Gus muttered. "When you did, you saved me back there."
"Yeah, I did. I saved you first, didn't I?"
"You did. Don't make a thing out of it."
"Gus," Talbert said sleepily, his eyes closing. You make them fuckers pay."
Gus didn't have to ask which fuckers.
"Here, me."
Gus removed his hands and regarded the towel, blinking at the steady seepage of blood. Time braked then. A thump came from beyond the bedroom door, but Gus ignored it. Talbert lifted his good hand off the bed. It rose slowly, like a toll bridge being drawn up. Gus clasped the hand and held it tightly, sniffling a little more than he should be. Talbert looked back at the window, blinked once as if terribly asleep, and closed his eyes.
"God damn it," Gus whispered, shaking his head. He couldn't fucking believe he was getting emotional over him. "Talbert. Talbert. Bro. Don't be a prick here."
But Talbert didn't respond. When Gus realized the strength had gone from Talbert's hand, he lowered it over the man's belly and gave it a solemn pat. Another thump demanded attention from outside the door. Gus rose from the bed, his face a shadow of loss, and regarded the dead man on the duvet. Then he considered his bat. The anger welled up. Chapter 10. Soft mood lighting illuminated the spacious corridor, making the dark baseboard wood and white walls glow with festive warmth. Crystal lamps, worth a fortune to certain collectors, perched on delicate tables and glittered. Paintings of abstract landscapes tastefully covered the walls and begged to be interpreted. A strip of beige carpeting stretched out from the rotunda's archway and traveled the length of this particular wing of the mansion. An ominous trail of blood dappled its cushiony surface, some blotches larger than others, marring the plush highway all the way to a closed door. A dozen deadheads ambled down this corridor, spaced out in an unintentional hunting pattern, led by sight and in some of them smell. Every step they took fouled the pristine carpeting. One zombie nudged a table, and the lamp tumbled to the floor with a startled glass equivalent of "oh," before shattering in a burst of fine slivers. Another deadhead stumbled into a wall, dragged its shoulder across an out-of-focus cliffside painting, and left a nihilistic barcode of grime. The dead did not care what they fouled with their presence. They didn't care about much, really. But when a bedroom door opened not 10 strides ahead and a piece of living meat stepped into view, confronting them with a short club, which quickly elongated into a dented bat, the dead cared very much. They ambled toward this challenger with surprising vigor. Gus stepped to the middle of the carpet, the overhead glow giving the cathedral-like hall an almost joyful feel. Christmassy. It truly was a beautiful home, fit for a king, an emperor. Talbert had been right about that. Gus slapped his visor into place and brought up his bat, scowling at the approaching dead. A real shame to fuck it all up. The closest deadhead had its entire head slugged from its shoulders. The bony bauble bounced off a resplendent oil painting, rattling the frame. The body of the zombie fell as if the very floor had given out underneath it. Gus took the legs out from the next gimp, a butler with its uniform in a shameful array of tatters. He crushed the skull under his boot, stomping it twice into the beige carpeting. Then he tore into the rest. Perhaps it was perfect spacing or the pace of the attacking deadheads. Maybe it was the lack of numbers, or just the familiar grace he'd acquired over the years in combating the undead. Probably a combination of everything. Whatever the reason, Gus ripped through the remaining zombies, killing each with devastating accuracy and oftentimes spectacular blows. Skulls exploded in sprays of chalky fragments and spoiled brain matter. Some heads flew from shoulders or simply caved in with a black spatter. Gus marched through the corridor of dead fuckers like a two-legged wrecking ball, destroying each corpse as it entered his range. He never tired, never uttered a single curse, his focus as keen as a surgeon's scalpel. He lined up each decomposing face as it came toward him and smashed it into the next week. A part of him dearly hoped that Mortimer was watching on his closed-circuit surveillance cameras and shitting his goddamn diapers. When the last gimp fell in a dusty tumble, only one figure remained, framed in the archway, wearing what looked like a jumpsuit of white. Gus's visor muted the glare, but there was no mistaking the grinning face of the Korean mask. Worse, Donald had his bow up, an arrow readied and aimed. A dark eye lined up the visor of Gus's helmet, freezing him in his tracks. But Donald did not release that steel-tipped shaft. Instead, he eased off on the draw and lowered the bow. With infinite care, he placed the weapon on the carpet before straightening, his gloved palms facing out in a gesture of, "See, I'm unarmed."
"You must fucking think I'm all for fair play or something," Gus seethed and immediately stepped forward, gearing up with the bat.
Donald snapped his right leg up and out, front-kicking Gus in the solar plexus hard enough to propel him back onto his ass in that nasty carpet broth of spilled head cheese and rancid blood. Gus released the bat and rolled onto his stomach, audibly attempting to draw air into a paralyzed diaphragm. The corridor became a blurred plane, shifting and distorting before reforming. He gasped, wheezed, dragging in air that seemed to cling to his remaining teeth, refusing to go where it was most needed. The bashed head of a gimp resting on its squashed side smiled with inhuman mirth. The whole scene wavered, as if Gus had plummeted into deep water. The impulse to get to his feet and defend himself was there, but his body refused to obey, refused to refill on air, panicking him. Donald came into view, fitting metal to his hands, taking his time in adjusting the nightmarish upgrades. Finally, Gus's lungs allowed a sip of oxygen. It rushed to his brain. He got up and regarded his foe, standing in a martial art pose, fists held low to his body, his legs spaced apart just a little more than his shoulders. His knuckles shone like chrome nightmares, and it took Gus a moment to realize that old Donald had put on brass knuckles, or at least the equivalent, complete with spikes. Grunting, pissed off, Gus stood. Donald blurred into a spin and slammed his boot heel into the side of Gus's helmet, sending him into the wall. The world went lopsided, spilling him off a flat edge. When he opened his eyes, he was on his back once more. Helmet saved him that time. Puffing and groaning, Gus sat up with the help of an elbow, considered Donald's wide-footed stance, sighed, and shook his head.
My fucking luck. A goddamn ninja.
The smiling mask didn't answer. Gus climbed to his feet and got his guard up, his head clearing with every second. He stepped toward his adversary, jabbed and missed. Jabbed twice more before swinging a roundhouse for that grinning face. Donald dodged them all and countered with a pulverizing combination of strikes, knuckles machine-gunning Gus's body and head with deadly force. Gus's visor flew off. His head got jacked to the right and left. Each punch tenderized his torso and stuttered him back into the wall, the only thing keeping him up. Seeing his prey falter, Donald spun and torpedoed his heel into the lower abdomen of his opponent. Gus dodged it at the last split second, and Donald's foot hammered through the wall, halfway up the shin. Seizing the opportunity, Gus barreled into the off-balance man, shoving him backward and hearing a yelp of pain from the grinning mask. He punched that smiling face twice, the wooden facade splitting under hard knuckle plates. The third punch torqued Donald's head into the wall. The mask fell, revealing a black ski mask and stunned eyes. Gus kicked the foot Donald stood upon, and the snow-camouflaged killer dropped awkwardly, his other foot still trapped. Remorseless, and remembering every arrow bounced off his ass, Gus stomped on the ski-masked head, repeatedly striking his target until he placed both arms against the wall and didn't bother looking. When Gus couldn't make Donald any more dead, he backed off, chest heaving, and ignored the mess at the base of the corridor. His chest sore and heaving, Gus looked left and right, saw no other threat, and wearily retrieved his bat from where he dropped it. Something drew his attention to the ceiling where the dark snow cone of a surveillance camera gleamed at him. "That's two," Gus muttered, and walked unhindered to the landing. He peeked around the corner and saw a heap of zombies blocking the opening he'd made in the first barricade. Gimps shuffled along the edges of the rotunda's ground level, but none tried climbing the stairs. He reckoned the corpses he'd just killed were the last few crawling through after Talbert. The chainsaw lay on the landing, and Gus picked it up, not knowing why, but catching a whiff of grand destruction on the air. Tool in hand, he walked away from the rotunda, over the unmoving bodies in the corridor, and followed the carpet to wherever it took him. Chapter 11. The kitchen lay at the end of the hall, just before a set of double doors that opened into a games room. The area reminded him of a few favorite bars back in the days of his youth, when he roamed Annapolis on Friday nights, frequenting two-for-one happy hour sessions and guzzling his share, making moves on the cut-off jeans honeys and their tanned legs. Happier times, unlike the vengeful shit he was about to wreak. Why the hell Mortimer had a fully stocked kitchen on the third floor before the zombie apocalypse simply befuddled Gus's commoner's sensibilities. If the old man had foreseen the end of the world, well, that was different. But to build a mansion the size of a Hyatt hotel and then decide it was too much effort to walk all the way downstairs for a midnight snack didn't justify the decadence. He dropped the chainsaw and bat on a flat countertop and stopped in front of a shiny sink, realizing how parched he was. The cupboards above held coffee mugs. He pulled one down and filled it with water from the faucet. The mug filled slowly, revealing the water pressure at that level wasn't the strongest. Once finished, he removed his helmet and downed his drink, leaving the mug on a tidy dish rack. Gus studied the ceiling and saw a water distributor hung almost over the stove and its four burners for a sprinkler system. Sniffing, Gus grabbed his bat and test swung it twice. The nearest camera was outside the kitchen, so he pulled a chair out from the island and used it to climb up onto the granite countertop. Once there, he studied the sprinkler before bashing it free of the ceiling. Water trickled from the remaining metal stub. Satisfied, Gus dropped to the floor and inspected the cupboards once more, finding stores of freeze-dried food and a bottle of cooking oil. He palmed the cooking oil and hefted it thoughtfully. Fire was an old friend of his. He knew it quite intimately. And he wondered. The oven drew his attention.
"You seeing this, Mort?"
Gus asked as he flicked on the oven and hiked the temperature to its limit. He opened the metal door and squee-sprayed oil over the exterior and interior, drenching it in canola gold. Some dish towels hung off a rack, as well as a roll of paper towels, and all that got heaved inside. A round wooden table and chairs filled one corner of the kitchen, and Gus shook his head at the convenience of having such combustibles nearby. The furniture quickly fell to the chainsaw's teeth, and Gus relished the smell of sawdust and smoke. A whoomp made him turn around just as the fire alarm went off. The oil had reached its flashpoint, and a great orange lick of fire filled the oven's metal mouth. Smoke spiraled from its depths. Gus approved. He gathered up his bat and sheathed it. Fuel. The word got him moving. He tossed a chunk of table wood into the oven and jogged around a corner to the nearest bathroom. The face cloths and hand towels came off in hard yanks and got fed to the flames. All except two. Gus gathered up a chair leg and tied one end off with a towel. The other got stuffed as far as it would go into a pouch on his Nomex jacket. He didn't care if it caught fire eventually. The Nomex had saved his life more times than he could remember, and he trusted its protection completely.
"What are you doing?" Mortimer asked from beyond the kitchen, yelling to make himself heard over the high-pitched droning of the alarms.
The old guy sounded fearful. Gus returned to the oven and held his makeshift torch inside the blaze. The towel caught and burned brightly in the overhead lights, which Mortimer seemed content enough to leave on.
"You're burning my kitchen."
Quick, for an asshole. But no one ever said assholes were universally stupid. They weren't. They were just assholes. A frenzied whine erupted from the speakers then, as if Mortimer were searching for something lost among a pile of rubbish. Gus didn't care. Hefting his torch, he left the kitchen and decided to take a walk, to explore this magnificent castle. As he walked, he applied the torch to anything that would burn. Curtains, oil paintings, even the clothing of unmoving zombies. The bedrooms on either side of the hall contained a rich source of combustibles, and Gus applied flame to thick duvets and wall-length curtains. Some of the towels and the ensuites he used to replenish his torch, but once done, he left the bathrooms in flames and smoke. He ignited fine-smelling linen closets filled with summer sheets of silk and winter cotton blankets. One door hid a walk-in station used for storing chemical household cleaners, all wonderfully flammable. Shelves contained cleaning utensils, rags, and roll upon roll of toilet paper. It all went into a clothes hamper of fire, doused with whatever fluids the servants had stored there. He left the area before the acrid smoke from the cauldron of burning chemicals could cause him harm.
"You're insane!" Mortimer's voice grated through his microphone, sounding close enough to swallow it whole. "Simply insane. How can you live here if you burn it all? How? The destruction. You'll never be able to repair it. Listen to me. If you want me, I'll tell you how to find me. Just stop burning everything. Here. I'm in a safe room on the top floor. Just come on up and you can kill me easily. I'm just an old man."
That was something to consider, but Gus had no interest in seeing the face of the owner. Mortimer was smart. No telling what manner of booby traps or pitfalls he protected his inner sanctum with, and listening to the old bastard's voice dripping with ill-hidden desire only prompted Gus to continue on his current course of action. He much preferred listening to the panic in Mortimer's tone, which was as fine a tune as any. Feeling surprisingly serene, Gus walked from bedroom to bedroom, burning as he went. He kept ahead of the growing blaze, however, and tisked upon discovering a substantial fire hazard in the third-floor library. Not even a sprinkler in the ceiling. But then, with the low water pressure on the upper level, having one wouldn't have made a difference. He emptied shelves of paperbacks and textbooks onto the floor, some apparently notably old and probably worth a considerable amount of money. The flames devoured it all.
"You can't do this," Mortimer droned on. "My books. Oh, sweet Jesus, my books. You have no idea what you've done. I've collected them since..." "Oh, stop. At once, stop. What do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. You want food, medical supplies, cars, anything."
"Wait.
What are you..." "That painting cost thousands. In the name of Christ, what is it that you want? Name it, and I'll direct you to where you can find it. Wait. Wait. You're destroying private property."
Plush chairs, rugs, even thin pieces of ornamental wood, all felt the lick of the torch, all fed a different kind of beast. The halls became smoky tunnels, which started making Gus cough, the gauzy haze choking his airways. He had no worry about burning himself, but he knew most house fire deaths occurred from smoke inhalation. The thought that he hadn't planned out his attack thoroughly enough occurred to him. The hallway he followed took him into forbidden areas of the house, the smoke billowing. When he finally turned around, the sight made him stop and stare, blinking his unprotected, watering eyes. He'd unleashed an inferno. Flames waved merrily from open doorways as if well-wishing his departure, glowing eerily in the rising clouds of smoke. Like any good fire, getting it started was the difficult part, but once it got going, feeding it was your only concern. The rows of bedrooms, libraries, living spaces, linen closets, and everything between possessed plenty of fuel.
"What is it you want?" Mortimer wailed over the loudspeakers. "What? Just tell me!"
"Fuck you, Mort." Gus stepped through another door and entered yet another bedroom. As antisocial as old Mort was, it was difficult to believe he needed so many. A king-size island dominated the center of the room, covered in delicate sheets of what appeared to be mosquito netting, or perhaps some fairy-tale decor beyond Gus's everyman sensibilities. An adjoining ensuite had been sculpted from blinding porcelain, glittering gold light and sink fixtures, and more marble. A glass doorway led to a shutter-free deck outside. Mortimer had the bucks to burn, and that made Gus chuckle. The short laugh got him coughing harder, squinting against the smoke clinging to his ass, and he decided it was time to leave. He tossed his torch into the ensuite, closed the door, and went about stripping off bedsheets. These he quickly cut into strips with his boot knife and tied together, coughing the whole time. Once done, he carried his makeshift rope back to the balcony door, splitting smoke into twirls. Gus stepped outside into the night, gasping at the pure air. The blaze rumbled against the walls like a low-grade earthquake. The damn thing caught a whiff of air as well and liked it. Couldn't tell him fires weren't living creatures. Gus tied off one end of his makeshift rope to a stumpy granite post and heaved the other over the balcony. Under a night sky bristling with stars, he clumsily rappelled to the ground, three stories below. He crunch-landed in a wiry hedge of some sort. Once free of it, he realized he stood at the back of the house, coughing out the smoke in his lungs and feeling positively polluted by the bitter flames. He took a moment to stop and watch flashes and flickers behind dark windows. Mortimer's voice was noticeably absent. The night twinkled, at times clouded by cottony wisps. Gus walked away, aware of his aches. Any moment he expected an arrow in the back, or his face, exposed by the missing visor. Perhaps even a zombie might shamble out from the darkness, or even better, one on fire. Nothing of the sort happened, however. And in a few long minutes of following the wall of the house, he circled back to the paved driveway and spied Talbert's minivan and his beige SUV. Gus sagged into the driver's seat, utterly exhausted and relieved to be inside. The higher windows of the mansion flashed fire every so often, catching his attention. Mortimer's immense home would take hours to burn, and as much as Gus wanted to sit and watch, he decided against it. He'd destroyed a man's castle that night, and an odd sense of déjà vu haunted the darker corners of his mind. If Mortimer was in a panic room of sorts, he'd have to leave it before the fire trapped him, and trap him it would eventually. If he was being truthful, and Gus suspected Morty incapable of lying, the reclusive billionaire was probably well on in years, perhaps even ancient. In time, the floors would fall into the lower ones, and if left unchecked, Mortimer would be homeless by the morning. If he survived the barbecue. Fingers on the steering wheel, Gus found the keys left in the ignition and started the machine. The dashboard clock displayed 4:56. 5 in the morning. The sky was as black as if the sun had burned itself dry and left the world spinning. Gus put the SUV into gear and drove away from the burning mansion, not the least interested in watching an old man's final bastion perish in the dawn's light. He hit the 101 in short time and drove perhaps 20 kilometers before his body demanded he stop and rest. He parked the vehicle at the top of a low incline, his muscles aching. The rearview mirror revealed the glow from the massive conflagration, large enough to be seen kilometers away. Gus watched it as his eyelids grew heavy. He dreamed of fire.
Chapter 12. The sun blazed through the fogged-up windshield like a prison spotlight, waking Gus. The dashboard clock stated the time as 10:42 a.m. He eased himself out of the SUV with a moan, knowing Donald had gotten in his share of punishing licks. For the next 15 minutes, Gus extracted himself from the Nomex and threw it into the back of the vehicle. The farm was too far away to drive home wearing the heavy gear, too uncomfortable. Once it was off, he pulled on a light windbreaker. The black sweater and jeans he'd worn underneath the Nomex stank of sweat. In the distance, black, rolling clouds marred the morning sky as if evil incarnate stirred a huge cauldron just beyond the hills. He tuned out for a short time, listening to the twittering of hidden birds. Weeds sprouted through cracks in the pavement. A few derelict cars littered the highway. Empty. Gus got into the SUV. The drive back home relaxed him, despite his hurts, and twice he pulled over to nap, the solemn landscape lulling him to sleep. Upon waking, he made the mental note to have Maggie take a look at him. Gus resumed driving. Thoughts of Talbert and his frat crew lingered as he rolled down the final strip of highway to the farm. Even old Mortimer and his boys. Also, the loss of what had been a very valuable piece of property in the mansion recalled his own house a long time before. His mountain fortress took his mind off the driving, and he went a good ways before noticing black curls of smoke rising up on the right, over a wall of trees.